Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Que quiero sentir tus labios besándome otra vez. Suave. Bésame, bésame. Suave. Bésame otra vez.
The Perreo Friday continues with the whitest Hispanic song that there is.
Ever.
I mean, even any party you've ever been to, if this song comes on, no matter who, as long as you're in Miami, regardless of race, regardless of wherever you come from, you know this song.
Oh, my goodness. I remember listening to this in high school.
Yeah. Suavemente.
You know they're rolling the R's and stuff like that? Chris, you getting some guac after this? Huh?
Who were you listening to yesterday's show?
I was not. Okay. But Zach texted me and was like, yo, ask him for some guac. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So Solana and I were yesterday on the 4th of July, and we were talking about Latin things that you say in perhaps a non-Latin fashion.
Okay.
Because you've sort of been anglicized. For example, guacamole is how you should say it, but you go to Chipotle and ask for guac.
Yeah, guac and chips.
Exactly. Just as I admitted that I once asked for a Grandy iced coffee at Starbucks, which is the whitest thing that I've ever done.
Yeah, super white girl right there.
Yeah, it really is. Very basic. Very basic of me to have done. All right, we got some Copa America coming up this weekend. The final will feature Brazil taking on Peru. And joining us right now to discuss it is Univision's Nico Cantor, who joins us from Rio de Janeiro. Nico, appreciate the time, man.
Hey, Chris. So going along with what you said, we've got the Copa America final.
Yes,
there you go.
Not Copa America.
Right. Between Brazil and Peru.
Yes.
it's going to be very exciting, weather permitting. It's been raining the last 2 days. I've been wanting to go to the beach in the some hours that we have at the very beginning of the day before we start getting our work underway. It's been raining terribly. We're in a shopping mall right now because we cannot go anywhere. It's pouring outside. Apparently by tomorrow it's going to stop, but it's been like this the last couple of days, and Peru has trained under the rain in really bad conditions. Brazil is in kind of like their training center, which is in Teresópolis, maybe like an hour and a half away from here. So their conditions are a little bit better, but hopefully by Sunday it all clears up.
Nico, I will say this for the mass of men in Miami. We do not feel happy for you. We're not jealous at all. So, I don't care that it's raining right now for you because you're still in Brazil.
No, but you know what, though? In fairness to Nico, covering a major tournament, flying city to city, there's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of, I'm going to enjoy Brazil.
And so
that time in between the semifinal and the final where there are no games going on, it's like, finally, I can enjoy Brazil. And you go to enjoy Brazil, Copacabana, should be gorgeous. It's the picturesque scenes and it's pouring rain.
Let me tell you one thing.
Guys, I've been here. I've been to Rio 3 times already. And I've been done Confederations Cup. I was here 1 month during the World Cup. And now this time I have not gone to Christ the Redeemer yet.
Oh, wow.
To have been there for basically 3 months of your life and not seen the main tourist destination just goes to show what hard work goes on in a major tournament.
Other attractions in Brazil right now, okay?
Which there are many. Nico, I don't have no idea what he's talking about. None. All right, so let's talk some football then. So we have a Copa America final on Sunday. Brazil taking on Peru. Now, this was a match that took place in the group stage, and Brazil won it 5-0.
Yeah.
So I think we're very much hoping that the final will not be a repeat of that. Do you think it will be, Nico?
I don't think it will be just because it's a final. The circumstances are wildly different. I think you have to consider that game that Peru played versus the game that they played against Chile. It's stark contrast. Mm-hmm. And you can look straight up at certain individual players. I'll point out the goalkeeper, Gallese, who at Univision, we've had him under a microscope for a long time. He doesn't play in Liga MX anymore, but he was playing in basically the worst team in Liga MX which is Veracruz, and he is not a good goalkeeper. Just to be straight up honest, very average goalkeeper. And he had one of the most magnificent performances I've ever seen against Chile. If I would want to ask him, and surely the answer would be that it's the best performance of his career. He literally went from having the worst goalkeeping performance of the Copa America to having the best goalkeeping performance of the Copa America. And you could just start not only singling out players, but also look at it from a team perspective. What Peru did collectively against Chile in that first half especially, it was incredible. They were all on the same team. The pressing was incredible. Tapia and Gotun were stopping Chile right at the midfield. It looked like they had a wall right there, and then Chile couldn't get past it. They really limited Arangis. They limited Vidal. Sanchez was nowhere to be found. Alvincula, the right back, had a great game. So it's just a completely different circumstance. And if Peru can dream of lifting their third Copa America in Brazil, I think they can definitely do it. But Brazil has the pressure of winning it. It's going to be a different game, I can guarantee you, from the group stage. But you got to play the 90 minutes.
Now, we're joined here by Nico Cantor covering the Copa America for Univision and Televisa out in Rio. Now, in terms of the way that these two teams, so Peru obviously loses 5-0, but one of the reasons why is because they are one of the few teams that will actually go at Brazil. Peru go at everyone.
Yep.
And so you do leave yourself exposed, but that should lead to an attacking and both teams trying to play probably the best, from the neutral's point of view, Copa America final we could have potentially had.
Yeah, I think that Peru isn't going to be as audacious as they were against Brazil. I think they might be a little bit more reserved as they were against Uruguay and start feeding those moments out, because Brazil is going to be the team that's going to come out on fire, I believe, from the very beginning. So if Peru can have somewhat of a similar defensive performance as they did against Uruguay and Chile as well, that's why their defensive performance against Chile probably isn't as highlighted, because they did win 3-0. But they're going to need a little bit of the defense from Uruguay, the offense from Chile, that efficient offensive attack that they had. And I think they could somewhat surprise Brazil, but I do not think they're going to be as audacious as they were against Chile and as they were against Brazil in the group stage.
And in terms of Brazil, do you think that, I mean, in South American World Cup qualifying, they were amazing towards the end. They really came on strong. But at the World Cup, never really delivered in Russia on what they had put together in South America. Now that they're in this final, now that they're trying to win a major tournament for the first time since 2002, would this be a real signal that the Brazil that everyone associates with the yellow shirts is back? Do you think that Brazil is back to being what they were when they were winning World Cups?
Yeah, well, just a quick correction. The last major tournament they did win was the Copa America in 2007.
Oh, forgive me.
Still, for Brazilian standards, that's still a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think this generation of Brazilian fans has grown poorly accustomed to so much success. And now that this team doesn't, or this national team for the last, 12 years now, mm-hmm. Hasn't been up to par, I think people are really putting that pressure on Brazil. Mind you, if they don't win on Sunday, it's a complete failure. It's not that they got to the finals. It's very similar to that Argentine mentality that I relate so much because of my background and it being one of the national teams that I follow with my heart. For Argentines, getting to the final is no good. You got to win the final. And maybe that's a poor way of thinking just because of the history of your national team. But for Brazil, it's the same. And considering a country that they have in front of them, not that I'm talking down Peru, just that for Brazilian standards, if you're going up Brazil against Peru, just from a get-go, Brazil is the favorite. And you can't lose this match if you're Brazil. There's no excuse whatsoever. And Brazil are obligated to win. And of course, for Tite, the coach, it would be, I think, something that is very deserved, because he's been working. He was the one that took the reins on this Brazilian national team after the 7-1 freak show that we got in the World Cup. and you know, to have that courage to come in and rebuild and work this team that plays so well. A lot of people don't like him in Brazil, but I think this is his way of coming up on top and, you know what, my job, what the work that I've been putting in here deserves a championship, and I think that he can definitely get it, deservedly so, on Sunday.
And you mentioned your background, and we were actually having a discussion earlier about this in Argentine and Messi, and is Messi truly a different Messi with Barcelona than he is with his national team? Like, what is the difference for him playing with Barca? Like, some people say he's not surrounded by great players, and I look at some of the guys like, you know, Sergio Aguero being one of the best finishers and strikers in EPL, but what's the disconnection between the national team him for him there and in Barcelona?
So I think what Argentina asks from Messi is a bit different than what Barcelona asked from Messi. And you could tell when he's on the field that his movements are wildly different. The only game that I think that he was somewhat his Barcelona self was against Brazil, where he did play very well, I believe. In fact, I think Argentina played really well against Brazil, but Brazil also played really well against Argentina. And they were unlucky with a couple of missed opportunities, including balls on off the woodwork. The thing with Messi, I think that he I think it's, his final was the 2014 final, and very unluckily, he couldn't win that. But let me compare to you. I mean, you got to also think the players that he's surrounded by, which is my first argument. Other than Agüero, Agüero and Messi are the only two really different players. Name me one player that you think is incredible on the Argentine national team other than Agüero and Messi.
I mean, Mascherano in his day.
No, on this Copa America.
Yeah, right. No, I think from an attacking sense, probably
there's not a single player. There's not a single player from the goalkeeper to up top. The only incredible players are Agüero and Messi. Everybody else is quite average. Perhaps there's a couple of good players, but for Argentine standards, there's not a single specialist on any of the positions other than Messi and Agüero. When we were used to having Aymar, Perón, these players that are so that scratch world class, it's incredible that Argentina hasn't produced one of those types of players. Of course, there's potential in perhaps Paredes. Otamendi was criminal in this Copa America. And it's just, you know, there's no, in Spanish we use a good word that in English it doesn't translate, but I'm going to use it anyway because I like it so much, and I think it really it represents what Argentina is missing, and I think that's hierarchy in the sense that, you know, that having that class, that confidence that only Messi and Agüero have. I don't think you have that on the Argentine national team anymore. And of course, I think this Copa America, as a performance by Messi, it was bad. Messi, I was at every single game. Messi walked the field. I don't know if that's something that is brought down, that's asked for him from the coaching staff, but I spoke to Agüero, I spoke to Lautaro Martinez, and they were all talking about, yeah, us three on top. When finally Argentina found that attacking identity, they were like, yeah, we need to pressure up top, we need to move, and our defensive stance is really important because we're the first line that opposition needs to break. But Messi doesn't pressure. Agüero and Lautaro Martinez were doing all the work for Messi to literally, walk the field. And of course, I think we've gotten to a point where Messi is untouchable because Messi is who he is. But I think you can ask a little bit more of him, which we got against Brazil. But all that being said, it wasn't even enough to be the side that finally made the final.
Nico Cantor covering the Copa America for Univision and Televisa out in Rio de Janeiro. We very much appreciate the time. You can find him on Twitter at NicoCantor1 is how you find him on Twitter. Doing a great job covering the tournament. Very much appreciate the time, sir.
Of course, guys. Thank you. Anytime. Just hit me up.
And that is Nico from Rio de Janeiro.
I hope he has a caprina for me. I'm very jealous.
Yeah, Rio is one of those places that you want to go to.
I still haven't been to Brazil. That's on my bucket list.
It is a bucket list destination, that Copacabana Beach. I feel like all I'd want to see is whatever the backdrop has been for ESPN at the World Cup or Telemundo at Copa America, where it's just the, and NBC at the Olympics, just that Copacabana Beach, just that stretch of land that you see on the tele, just looks absolutely amazing. But I imagine there's so much to see in Rio.
You would just see me pacing up and down that beach, yeah, just walking this
just
way,
just going for a stroll,
turning around, yeah, just going back, turning around. That's me. That's me. That would
be you. Just be going for a stroll. Now, Alex, you wanted to ask a question. I'm sorry that I cut you off, but we're up against a break.
Yeah, no worries. I was just going to ask him if Messi's walking the field and they're all, I guess, upset with his play, then why do they still call Messi to the national team?
What? You want them to drop Messi?
Yeah, no. I think it's at this point, right? Like, you're hearing somebody who's followed, he's an Argentine, he's followed the team more than anybody, right? And, like, they're absolutely upset with his play. They're saying he played awful in one of the world's biggest tournaments. So, like, why continue to call an old, aging player if he's not playing up to the standards that you want him to play to? I think it's a legitimate question.
Because he scored more goals than games played his club.
I know the answer is because he's one of the greatest players of all time, but
he's still one of the greatest players in the world.
Yes, but don't you think that's a valid question?
No, for
at
sure,
this point?
For sure. Yeah,
at
absolutely.
This point,
yeah,
right?
I mean, as many times as they failed, they've kind of gonna start looking for another way to skin this cat so they can actually win something. But Copa America final is Sunday, 4 p.m. as Brazil take on Peru in the final. Perreo Friday, and we're talking Copa America with Brazil and Peru, then we've got to say the names correctly. We're back with more after this.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Chris Winningham and Brian Monroe here until 6 p.m. Talking all the latest. The latest on Kawhi Leonard, by the way. I imagine a lot of you sports fans out there flip on the radio just to hear anything that there is to know on Kawhi. Chris Carter has been the provider of all of it. I'd actually recommend following him on social media so you can get all the latest if you want it. The Kawhi update as of an hour ago is, after looking like we would find out today, we will not. Kawhi Leonard is still undecided and is not going to finalize his decision today. Also, contrary to other reports, Kawhi is not interested in signing a 1 or 2 year deal. When he signs, it will be a long-term contract. So that's the latest on Kawhi Leonard. Now, there's been Jalen Rose had tweeted that he thought that Kawhi might go to Toronto on a 1 or 2 year deal to defend his championship and maybe go again. But now that we know that it'll be a long-term deal, that might rule Toronto out to some extent. Or maybe he just thinks, you know what, I'm really bought into the Toronto project and I want to stay. But basically their whole team is expiring this year.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And can be an entirely new team in a year's time.
Yeah. I mean, but also you could bring another big-time free agent if you wanted to in a year or two and say, hey, I've won a championship here. Team up with me. The country will love you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, maybe Toronto. People love going to Toronto like as a tourist destination. I've never been. So I'm not familiar with what Toronto has to offer, but a lot of people just will make the sound that you just made, which is Toronto. Great place.
Funny thing, I've never been to Toronto.
Oh, okay.
I've met a couple people from Toronto, though.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you know.
People?
People. People, yes. Yes. But I lived in Canada for a little bit because I played with Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Oh, nice.
And obviously, I didn't know anything about Canada until I got there. And then when I finally started meeting people from Montreal and Toronto.
Mm.
I'm looking
back. When you go on the Argonauts road trip, would you have a nice time?
Oh, man. Listen, I'm looking back and thinking, what was my agent thinking? Of all the cities, Winnipeg?
Winnipeg?
I've met so many young ladies and lovely ladies from Toronto and Montreal. You couldn't pick those two cities?
Why not the Alouettes or the Argonauts? Come on.
Jeez. No, but yeah, Toronto's supposed to be a good time and big city, lots to do,
couldn't even send you to Regina.
I'm telling you.
Ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Solana just looked at me like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you?
I thought it was Regina.
No, it's pronounced Regina.
Is it really?
Regina. It's Regina.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a great sound that you made. Now, we were talking some Copa America in the previous segment, and we have a Women's World Cup final this Sunday as well. The U.S. men playing the Gold Cup final in Chicago, so cracking Sunday of proper football. But we mentioned earlier Alex Morgan's quote on the double standard that exists in the celebration of soccer. And I'll just read it for you again. I feel that there is some sort of double standard for females in sports, Morgan said, to feel like we have to be humble in our successes and have to celebrate, but not too much or in a limited fashion. You see men celebrating all over the world in big tournaments, grabbing their sacks or whatever it is. And when I look at sipping a cup of tea, I'm a little taken aback by the criticism. Now, I asked Solana, I watched a lot of soccer. I don't see that specific celebration that often. He says it's a fairly common thing in South America.
Is it really?
I guess.
Maybe fairly common was a stretch part, but that's
You've seen it before in South America.
It's prevalent in soccer, yeah.
Now, are they referring to tea or coffee in South America?
Neither.
No. What are they referring to?
We're talking about the sack celebration.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you see that. I think you see that all over.
You do?
Yeah, because
the grabbing of?
I mean, listen, which game, tournament did we just watch where the coach did it?
It was Diego Simeone in the Champions League.
There you go. Yeah, I was like, I know I just seen a coach just do it.
In a quarterfinal tie, which ended up losing.
Uh-huh.
to Juventus. In which he ended up losing to Juventus.
But that's the reason why I didn't want her to do it at that exact time, because I'm like, yo, this game is still early.
Okay, no, I mean, they won the game 2-0, but it's a two-legged tie, which they lost 3-0 in the second leg and went out. So, I think it was a round of 16, actually. But, that is a thing. But to me, the celebration thing is not really a gender thing. And look, I'm not trying to tell Alex Morgan what to feel from a gender standpoint, because obviously the women's national team feels discriminated against on the basis of pay, on the basis of criticism. They have a persecution complex and have the right to feel a persecution complex. But I feel like, because there's another celebration thing that happened recently where it's when they beat Thailand 13-0. And they're celebrating the goals like 8, 9, 10, and 11.
I was one of those people.
As if they scored 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, and 3.
I was like, yo, 8, 9, 10, 11. You don't need to celebrate. Just get back in the huddle and go. Like,
right. But like, to me, it's like celebration is one of those things where, regardless of gender or whatever, you're either someone who's down for celebrating to the nth degree, or you're not. Like, I don't think it necessarily comes down to gender. Again, I'm not trying to tell her what to feel, because obviously she feels this way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think there are people who are very stodgy about their sports, and there are people who aren't. And I think it's really cool that the women's national team feels so confident that they're going to be scoring goals at this World Cup that they're thinking of celebrations. And they're this arrogant and understand that not only do they have to have success, but they have to generate news, right? They have to be front-facing so that when they come back and they play in their domestic league and they're playing in between World Cups and in between Olympics, people are still paying attention to them. Otherwise, their sport will die.
Yeah.
Like, their sport hangs in the balance. So they understand they have to draw attention. I think they've done brilliantly well at this World Cup to generate attention. But I do think that it is sort of a divide on either you're stodgy about your sports, or you're down with having fun with your sports. And I think the people who are getting mad at Alex Morgan are the people who side on the stodgy side, and not necessarily it's because of women's. I mean, there are people that find over-celebrating in men's sports to be just as distasteful. They're just not down for it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a big fan of celebrating. I think it brings the game excitement.
Yeah.
It's fun. You want to see what the player is going to come up with creativity-wise. And just in that case alone, I just look at it as, you just need to be ready to fight, because if you do something directly to a team that's quote-unquote, if you want to say, disrespectful, as long as you're ready to back it up and throw down, cool, because you've seen in sports when you go stomp on the Dallas Star, you're going to have one or two players that are like, yo, that's disrespectful.
And
you're
the Dallas
throw
fans
down.
Are going to be pissed off about that.
Exactly. So as long as you're ready to back it up, I'm saying, hey, bring it on, man. It's fun. Yeah. It's exciting. Yes. You get to laugh at it. You get to be like when they finally brought celebrating back in football, everybody couldn't wait. Yeah. Like, we wanted to see what you would come up next. Mm-hmm. But when you do something disrespectful, hey, as long as you're ready to back it up, cool. Yeah. Bring it on.
Now, we mentioned these stars that these women's national team players are becoming. Now, a host earlier on today on the station, Omar Kelly, is not necessarily buying that these women national team players are as big of stars. I hear we have sound of this.
Oh, boy.
That maybe the celebrity of the women's national team is a bit overstated.
So we have two clips here. I just want to set the scene. So,
yeah, sure.
This is Omar Kelly saying something really ridiculous.
That was you setting the scene?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it...
You're poisoning the well a little bit.
No, I feel like it needs to be set that way.
Go on.
So, Omar, be honest. Do you think you get recognized on planes more than Megan Rapinoe?
I'm absolutely certain I do.
You're so wrong.
I'm absolutely certain I do.
Is he joking?
No, he's dead serious. No, he's dead serious.
Is he joking?
Here's him trying to, I guess...
justify it.
Right.
Listen, I fly
I always fly, and I'm always on a plane with Dolphin fans, so I'm always recognized on the plane.
Yeah, okay, but Megan Rapinoe, if she's flying in the United States, there are going to be people on that plane who have watched her play soccer, no matter what route she's on. Now, Dan Day happened to be on a plane going to Seattle, where she lives, so come on, more people recognize me.
I can't believe
we're having this conversation. My mind is blown.
Why is he even having that conversation? Is he joking?
Like, no, he's serious.
Like, let's just say it from this standpoint. Whether you hate or like Megan Rapinoe, whether
you're
watch
aware
soccer
of her existence
or you don't watch soccer,
yeah,
you know exactly who she is.
Yeah.
His argument, though, to be fair to Omar, not that there's much being feared.
You haven't been terribly interested in fairness until now.
Right. So to be fair, he was saying that before the President Trump incident, most people, the common person in the United States, didn't know who Megan Rapinoe was. So to be fair, He's part of the context.
She's probably leaving this World Cup with a different level of fame than she entered.
Correct.
Okay, and to be fair, anybody that's not a Dolphins fan or listens to Sun Sentinel or football has no idea who Omar Kelly is. He walks on a plane, he's another black guy. That's it. That's all he is. I mean, come on. That's like me saying, oh, yeah, I'm more popular than what?
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. I mean, I don't know why people say it's a touchy subject. Like, what's the big deal? He's the color of black, so I can say he's a black man.
I mean, you could say that.
Well, I can't say if a Spanish dude walks on a plane as a Spanish dude or a white guy.
Yeah, but it's different.
It's different.
I know. You guys, okay. That's okay. Touchy subject. Okay.
We're talking NBA basketball. Rohan Nadkarni of SI next. Chris Whittingham, Brian Monroe here on 560 WQAM here until 6 o'clock tonight. Lots to get to in the realm of the NBA, and we'll discuss a majority of it right now with Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Kind of to join us here on WQAM. Rohan, appreciate the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
And repping the 954 here and abroad. So we very much appreciate it. So going into free agency, and I was actually on with Brian right before free agency started on Sunday, and I was making the case pretty strongly that the Heat were not going to be able to do anything as it relates to Jimmy Butler because they're over the luxury tax, much less the salary cap. What did you make of the fact that the Heat managed to pull this off and get Jimmy Butler in?
I mean, it was pretty crazy. I was with you guys. I was really skeptical. Obviously, we've seen the reports, but I was pretty skeptical that they could pull it off. I think what's interesting about this summer, and it's obviously not just Jimmy, is just the sign-and-trade coming back into the NBA. I don't think anyone expected that going into this offseason. We hadn't seen a sign-and-trade since 2017. Now we're just seeing a slew of them this summer. So I think what's happened is every time a new CBA is signed, there's always these unintended consequences, right? And I think GMs have kind of figured out how to navigate sign-and-trades again, which helps a team like the Heat, who we all know have been capped out and had these bad contracts and whatnot. So I think they're in a good spot. It helps that I think Jimmy wanted to get his way to Miami, and the Sixers, I think, kind of wanted to move on from him. So it was just kind of a perfect storm of events. But, I mean, it's good for Heat management. Listen, I think if they had gone into the summer and got rid of Whiteside, it would have been a win. Coming out with Jimmy Butler is pretty good for them.
For sure, and the fact that you managed to do both at the same time, I think, caught a lot of Heat fans by surprise. But the other part of this that I guess is confusing to some on the national scale, and maybe not as much here because we sort of understand what the Miami Heat organization has to offer, but people are going, wait a second, Jimmy Butler wants to win. Why didn't he want to stay in Philadelphia? There's some confusion as to the decision. Did you agree with that sort of skepticism, or do you understand why Jimmy Butler made this move and ultimately why he wanted to be a member of the Miami Heat?
I mean, I think we're gonna learn more about Jimmy's time in Philadelphia, I think, in the coming months, to be honest. I understand it from both sides. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler wants to win, but he wants to win on his terms, and I think Miami gives him an opportunity to do that. I think he trusts the front office to put pieces around him. There have been all kinds of stories, and you hear all the people talk about it on podcasts and stuff. Did Jimmy get along with some of the younger guys in Philadelphia? Was it right for him to be on the timeline that they are on where, you know, Ben Simmons is a younger player. Jimmy Butler demands kind of a certain level of commitment. And whether that's fair or not, I mean, he's run into problems in three different teams now, I think. But I don't think the Heat automatically means he's never going to win. I just think he wants an opportunity to win on his terms. And I think Miami gives him a better opportunity than Philadelphia. Whether the Heat will be more successful, I think that remains to be seen. But I think it gives him that chance that he wants.
Yeah, I think we all think that to be successful, you got to add a couple more pieces. And you hear the rumblings of DeMarcus Cousins. You hear Bradley Beal. You know, do you think that Pat Riley would be able to pull off another sign and trade or move some more pieces to get a Bradley Beal or DeMarcus Cousins to come down?
I wouldn't get my hopes up for something like that. I understand people are kind of have this invincible feeling right now. Anything is possible. We just got Jimmy Butler. Why not Bradley Beal? I think it would be a huge mistake if the Heat took on John Wall's contract. I think what you need is a similar situation maybe a year from now, maybe a few months from now, where Bradley Beal wants out of his contract, wants to force his way to Miami, and then maybe you could pull off a trade for him. But I think doing it this summer, getting caught up in the excitement, taking on John Wall's contract, giving up an asset like Justice or Bam, I think that would be a mistake. So I wouldn't get my hopes up for Bradley Beal just yet. I don't think, frankly, Beal hasn't made a strong case for himself to want out of Washington, and I think he does have an emotional connection to that team. So I just don't see Bradley Beal happening. I do think the Heat are going to be active and try to move off some of these other contracts, but Beal would be a big surprise to me.
Can you explain for the audience, you're joined here by Ryan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated, can you explain why the John, because I think people will hear, wait, I'm getting John Wall too and Brad Beal, why wouldn't I want that? And I think a lot of fans don't understand just how disastrous John Wall's contract extension is.
I mean, the John Wall contract is terrible for a lot of reasons. First of all, he's a guy, I like John Wall a lot as a player. I wanted him to work out, but his flaws kind of came to the forefront the last couple of years in Washington. I don't think he has a great reputation as a leader. Unfortunately, again, I really like him as a player. He wasn't able to lead that team to a lot of success in the postseason, even though he did play well in a lot of those series. But, I mean, you look at his contract right now, it's 4 years, over $140 million left. He's just going to take up so much space in the salary cap, and you can't afford to pay a player like him as much money as you are if he isn't going to deliver you consistent success, and he hasn't proven that. And that isn't even getting into, he is coming off two huge injuries. I mean, he had surgery on his knee, and then he tore his Achilles after that. I mean, coming back from a back-to-back series of injuries like that is incredibly difficult. I don't want to take a chance. I mean, it's one thing to take a chance on someone like Kevin Durant coming off an Achilles injury, but there are even questions about him. Taking a chance on John Wall, a player who relies so much on his athleticism, doesn't have a consistent jump shot, now he's coming off an Achilles injury and he's going to play the most loaded position in the league. That is just a gigantic risk that there's no reason the Heat should be taking a risk like that on a player like John Wall at this point in his career. And it pains me to say that because I like him as a player. I'm not trying to, insult John Wall, but that would be poor management to take a risk on him at this point in his career.
Now, we don't know yet where Kawhi is going, but presuming that everything else stays relatively the same, even if it goes back to Toronto, where do you see the Heat in the context of the Eastern Conference just with this one move alone, even if that's all they do, by losing Josh Richardson and Whiteside and adding Jimmy Butler? How much have they actually improved? They were a non-playoff team a year ago, fighting in that Orlando-Brooklyn area of the conference. You know Brooklyn's going to take a leap, but do you see them getting maybe up to the 5-6 range? Where do you see them in the conference of the in the context of the East?
I think they're going to be in that tier right below, the Bucks, Raptors, and maybe the Celtics now, the Sixers. I think the Heat are going to be in the tier right below that. I do think the 5-6 seed is the right area for them. Brooklyn's going to take a somewhat of a leap next year, but I don't think Brooklyn is going to be wildly better next season than they were this season. I still think Brooklyn's ceiling is a second-round team. I'm not enamored by the Magic. I know they obviously had a very good season for them last year. I don't know if that means they're set up for consistent success there. I think the Heat are going to be right there, kind of back in that 5-6 range, kind of where they were those last years of Dwayne Wade before he left for Chicago. I think they're going to be right in that group. And I think they're going to be competitive. I do think their ceiling is probably a second round. A conference finals would be an amazing season for the Heat. But I do think they'll be in the mix to kind of maybe push for a second round. It's going to help Spoh a lot to kind of have a scorer in his prime. I mean, he hasn't had that since the Big Three disbanded. And he's been able to make, some pretty compelling offenses out of the rosters he's had. I think it's going to be – what I'm most concerned about the Heat, I think they might be a team that's better in the playoffs than the regular season. I love Spoh. I think the criticism of his is sometimes he takes a while to nail down the rotation. And, again, he's going to, have a lot of moving pieces. How does he configure Justice, Gorin, Deion Waiters and Jimmy on the perimeter? How does he figure out who's going to handle the ball? I think that's going to take him some time. I think they're going to improve as the season goes along. But I think their ceiling is a second round right now.
joined by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. So beyond what the Heat did, what in NBA free agency has most interested you so far? Obviously, the Kawhi thing is still withstanding, but in terms of the rest of it, you know, obviously the Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant move, but even beyond that, what for you has most grabbed your attention so far in free agency?
I think just how many teams are kind of getting in the mix here. I think we're going to have so many good teams in the NBA next season, and I'm really excited just as a fan and someone who is watching League Pass every night. There's going to be a lot of good teams. I mean, there's teams that didn't even get involved in free agency, like the Houston Rockets and the Denver Nuggets, who are going to be very good next season. And then you look just the breadth of good teams in the league right now, the Lakers, the Jazz, you know, the Celtics with Kemba Walker, the Sixers are going to be really good again. The Bucks, you know, brought their core back. The Heat made a move. I mean, there's just going to be so many teams that are relevant next season. I think that's what excites me and interests me as someone who follows the NBA, that what we've seen this summer is a spreading of the wealth. And I think it's going to be the first time in maybe, you know, something like 10 years where we just don't have a clear-cut final favorite in each conference. I think it's just going to be wide open around the league. And that's what interests me. That's what excites me, is just how wide open things are right now after free agency.
Unless, right, unless Kawhi,
the Kawhi watch goes
unless
differently.
Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, then we're right back to where we started, even with the Warriors. It might even arguably be, would it be just as bad as the Warriors, if not worse, just because, I mean, the strength of those guys individually, okay, as a collective, Golden State was incredible, but individually, that is almost more star talent than the Golden State Warriors had, which is incredible to say.
It is crazy. Here's what I'll say about Kawhi to the Lakers. I think Kawhi going to the Lakers, that team would be closer to the 2010 Heat than the 2016 Warriors.
Mm.
You know, I think they're obviously going to be loaded. They're going to have more top-end talent, but it's going to be so difficult for them to fill out their roster. Who's their starting shooting guard? Is it Troy Daniels? Can you play Kyle Kuzma, Anthony Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi together? Who's going to guard point guards? I do think that team is obviously going to be very good, but I don't think they're going to be the kind of runaway favorite the Warriors were. I do think they're going to be beatable, especially in this first year. You know, there's no great free agents left on the board. They're going to have a tough time finding the role players to fit around those guys, and the roster construction, I think, is going to be a little bit awkward. And I think, I will say, I think writers obsess about that more than general managers. You know, general managers want to get the top-end talent in there and figure it out. So it's going to be interesting, but I do think the Lakers aren't going to be the runaway favorites the Warriors were. I think they're going to be a little bit closer that first year of the Big Three in Miami, where we said, how is anyone going to beat these guys? And it was a little tricky for them. So even if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, I still think there are going to be a lot of good teams in the league. They're going to be the favorite, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a gap as the Warriors have been over the last 2 years.
But I understand what you're saying, and certainly we saw Carlos Arroyo and Zydrunas Ilgauskas, and you know, Mike Bibby was welcomed with open arms because, oh my God, we got Mike Bibby in that 2010-11 season, and we were devastated because Troy Murphy didn't sign. I mean, there were any number of things that happened in that 2010-11 season that proves your point. But I just don't think in the history of the NBA there's been a collection of three guys who legitimately, because so I think that there are usually at any one time in the NBA six or seven real difference makers where if you start your team with that guy, you can win the championship. And I think at one time in the NBA, there will be three of those six or seven guys on the same team. I don't think we've ever had more than two on the same team. This, just as a collection of leading men on the same team. And look, maybe that bus heads, and certainly beyond a team-building standpoint, there's a chemistry standpoint of it too. But from an individual talent standpoint, I can't imagine there's been a group of guys like that in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know that I would disagree. I do think it would probably be the best top three of all time. I definitely would agree with that. You know, obviously, again, it's kind of that 4-8 where they could get tricky, but I'm with you there. I do think their top three would probably be the best top three of all time. I do wonder how their impact would get muted by playing with one another. You know, Anthony Davis is already going to get way less touches playing next to LeBron. How are LeBron and Kawhi going to work it out, you know, if it were to happen? But I do agree. On an individual level, those three guys together, I'm with you there. I don't know that there's a better top three of all time than those three together.
We're joined here by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Now, of those teams, so you mentioned all that movement in the rest of the league that you think can leave it wide open, and I agree. If Kawhi ultimately picks anywhere but the Lakers, this can be one of the best seasons we've had in a while. Who are the two or three teams that you're most interested in terms of competing for the championship that maybe, you know, is a, you know, Utah is one that certainly picked up a lot of buzz for what they've done. Who are some of the one or two teams that you think are going to be elevating into that conversation that maybe we're not used to being there?
I mean, Utah's going to be in there. I'm still really high on the Denver Nuggets. I think Denver was incredible last season, and they dealt with so many injuries during the regular season that people don't really take into account, and it's incredible that they still finished second in the conference. Despite all that, I think the Nuggets are going to be really good. I think what that team was lacking more than anything was playoff experience, and they got it. You know, their guys are all going to be more experienced next year. They're all sitting on the upswing of their career, so I think the Nuggets are going to be the team that's much more seriously in the championship conversation next season than people realize and aren't really talking about. I do think the Jazz are going to make that jump. The Jazz are kind of tailor-made for the playoffs right now with that lineup with Bogdanovich at the four. Even if they don't start him during the regular season, they're going to be a really good team in the playoffs. I'm really interested how the Sixers are kind of made to defeat the Bucks right now. I think that's why they brought in Al Horford. They need someone to defend Giannis. So, you know, those are the teams I have my eye on. But don't sleep on the Nuggets or the Rockets. Both those teams were really, really good last year. And even if they didn't make big changes, these other teams are still trying to catch up to them to some extent.
I want to get back to something you said earlier, which is as it relates to Jimmy Butler, the fact that there's maybe more of a story to get out in terms of what happened in Philadelphia. We know what happened in Minnesota. That played out very publicly. We know what happened in Chicago. That played out very publicly as well, where people are going, you know, it was Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade against the rest of the team. The fact that it's now three places for Jimmy Butler where it's been difficult for him to get on in a locker room is probably a warning sign for the Miami Heat. Do you think that there should be more of a concern about the fact that Jimmy Butler has not gotten on anywhere he's been?
Definitely. I think it's a concern. I mean, the Heat have shown they're able to handle personalities, right? Here's what I'll say about Jimmy to the Heat. This is the first time he's really chosen where he wants to play, right? Drafted by Chicago, traded to Minnesota, traded to Philadelphia. I think this is his first time, you know, similar to Kyrie, where he's gotten to choose where he wants to play. So the onus is on Jimmy to make it work. You know, he chose Miami. He wanted Miami. You know, show everyone why this was the location for you. But it definitely has to be a concern. It can't be something you ignore. I mean, three different places where he got into arguments with teammates. I mean, you know, three is a pattern, right? I mean, you can't ignore that. You can't sweep that under the rug. It's definitely a concern. I will say, you know, if Spo was able to make it work with the attention of the big three, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, I think he can handle Jimmy Butler. I think it helps that Jimmy is the clear-cut number one on this team. You know, in Chicago, he was on the upswing. He had to work with Derrick Rose. In Minnesota, it was Towns and Wiggins. In Philadelphia, it was Simmons and Embiid. I think it helps Jimmy a lot that he's kind of the clear-cut number one guy here, and he can set the tone. And the organization's culture seems to match what he's looking for. So I think, you know, all those factors help a lot. He's choosing to play here. But the onus is on Jimmy to prove that he can be, you know, a good teammate, a good leader, because it's definitely concerning that it's not worked in three different places.
Right, and the fact that sort of what he's asked for his whole career in terms of the professionalism of his teammates and all that is something that you'll probably find here in Miami. But it's just it's bizarre to me that, I mean, obviously it is celebrated, and it's just such a huge step forward for Miami that they have a star player. But at the same time, you're dealing with a personality that just hasn't worked in other places. And look, I mean, people can say that about Miami and that they tend to make things work, but they wanted to get Hassan Whiteside to work, and it didn't. They struggled last year to get James Johnson and Deion Waiters back to where they were and being in shape and at full performance. So it hasn't always been perfect around here. There have been, you know, guys that have, you know, sort of come and gone through here, but Miami does well to keep it quiet. But it doesn't always work here. So that for me is a big concern, especially anointing him as the leader of the team.
Yeah, it's definitely something you can't ignore. I'm with you there. I will say, you know, I think what makes Jimmy different than those guys is he wants to win, right? I mean, and you can say what you want about him as a teammate, but, you know, in terms of Whiteside, what was it? It was effort. Like, he wasn't giving that effort every night. You can't say that about Jimmy Butler. You know, one thing about him is I think he's one of the bigger competitors in the league, and I do think the biggest thing about Jimmy is his issues with his teammates have always stemmed from that competitiveness. I think they've always stemmed from his determination. I'm not saying he's a perfect guy, but I don't think he has bad character either. I think his intentions, at least, I think are good, and his intentions are aligned with the Heat, which is, I'm pushing myself every day to win. I just expect everyone else to have that same level of commitment. I'm not saying that's necessarily fair, but I think what separates him from some of those other guys and other guys who, you know, maybe even Kyrie Irving, is I think Jimmy's intentions are very clear, and that is, he's willing to do whatever it takes to win.
Ryan Nutcarney, check him out. Sports Illustrated, SI.com is where you read the work, and on Twitter, at Nutcarney as well. Appreciate the time, sir.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Rohan Nutcarney of Sports Illustrated for joining us there. Thanks to Dave Hyde of the Sun Sentinel and Nico Cantor of Univision as well. Hope you enjoy your 4th of July weekend. That'll just about do it for myself, for Brian Monroe, and for Alejandro Solana. Have a good weekend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.